From the ashes of World War I, Adolf Hitler attempted to build a sinister new world order, led by a so-called race of Aryan supermen, spreading a reign of terror unlike any the world had ever known. Many believe the Nazis conjured strange spirits and followed occult practices that had lain dormant in Europe for thousands of years. Now documents prove that their beliefs were based on a perversion of ancient pagan lore, a twisting of mythic battles between forces of light and darkness, and a terrifying journey into a world ruled by mystics, madmen, and murderers. The Himalayas of Tibet. In the 1930s, the Nazis began searching the top of the world for evidence of ancient high priests who they believed were their blood ancestors. The Nazi belief in these ancestors was to form the foundation of Germany's new religion, a religion with Adolf Hitler as its high priest. Inspiring Hitler's evil crusade was a belief that pure Aryan blood was being contaminated by so-called inferior races, and that once rid of foreign elements, a new race of Aryan supermen would rule the world. This was the Nazi interpretation of ancient myths and occult lore dating back thousands of years. To prove their superiority, the Nazis would leave no myth or religion unexplored, in effect borrowing from any belief they could adapt to the Aryan cause. As a foundation for this new faith, Hitler needed to eliminate competing religions. To achieve absolute control, he not only used the power of myth, but co-opted Christian ritual. His inner circle, who had strong ties to the occult, would help him to accomplish this goal. Among them were Deputy Führer Rudolf Hess, whose correspondence reveals a devotion to astrology and forecasting by the stars. Nazi Commissioner for Philosophy and Education, Alfred Rosenberg, who wrote the book laying out the tenets of the Nazi religion. Joseph Goebbels, Hitler's Minister of Propaganda, whose diary records his use of astrological forecasts in planning the war against the Allies. And Heinrich Himmler, head of the SS and the Nazi death camps, whose personal papers reveal that he was the master occultist of the Third Reich and ultimately the architect of the new Nazi religion. At the foundation of this new religion was an ancient occult legend that tells the story of a continent somewhere in the North Atlantic. There lived a race of super beings who had fallen from grace through evil and vice. A great flood wiped these beings off the face of the earth. But before they could all be destroyed, certain priests escaped by boat. Eventually finding their way to India and the high peaks of Tibet. These escaped priests, believed by mystics to be the original race of Aryan godmen, were said to be the ancestors of all Indian and European people. The land was called Atlantis. Certain German mystics claimed the Atlantis myth was actual history. Their proof that Aryans were the chosen people, descended from the super beings of Atlantis, and that they had lost their powers by mating with mere mortals. In these theories lay the seeds of Nazi doctrine. Reichsführer SS Heinrich Himmler, an extreme nationalist, made it his mission to prove that the Germanic peoples were the descendants of the Atlantic master race.
Nationalists, particularly those who believed in the superiority of the Aryan race, always had entertained a notion of a vanished island, a hidden world, some kind of utopia. Himmler may have thought it was in Tibet, and that this master race, the Atlantic master race, as Himmler liked to call it, might have been in the Tibetan mountains. Descendants would still be alive.
Himmler believed the occult legend of Atlantis was true, that the mythical super beings of Atlantis eventually made their way from Tibet to Northern Europe, and that their descendants became the Nordic or Aryan races. Government-funded expeditions under Himmler's direction were sent to Tibet, searching for evidence of their ancestors. To document this process, Nazi researchers took this film footage. In 1946, in a post-war interrogation by the US Army, the SS scientist who led one of the Tibetan expeditions described his first meeting with Himmler. He said, "Himmler mentioned his belief that the Nordic race did not evolve, but came directly down from heaven to settle on the Atlantic continent, and that ancient immigrants from Atlantis had founded a great civilization in Central Asia."
Although he was a very rational, calculating power broker, he was also a romantic idealist, and he certainly believed in these myths. Otherwise, he wouldn't have spent the money and the time and the energy he did sending expeditions to Tibet.
In Tibet, villages were subjected to full-body inspections by Nazi researchers, looking for what the party called Aryan physical traits. Narrow foreheads, long limbs, and angular features.
And this, of course, was stepped up by the time the war was on, in that by this time, they were able to do experiments of a rather still, innocent type on the living object. And what I'm talking about is measuring people's skulls, for instance.
The quest to prove the superiority of the Aryan race soon moved into the criminal. The Nazis would begin killing people and using their bodies for experiments. They believed that once they had proven that their ancestors were gods, it would be a simple step to recreate this race of Aryan godmen through selective breeding.
That you could somehow force human evolution in a sort of hothouse environment by selecting the parents of a child and then rebreeding their offspring until the day when eventually he managed to breed the Superman, who was predicted by all their occult theories.
Hitler proclaimed, "Humanity accomplishes a step up every 700 years, and the ultimate aim is the coming of the sons of God. All creative forces will be concentrated in a new species. It will be infinitely superior to modern man."
All that had to be done was the Aryans had to repurify themselves in order to restore their magical powers and therefore restore their original identity of being the God-men.
The breeding stock was Himmler's SS. He recruited only the strongest, best conditioned, and what he considered the best looking young men. Tall, blonde, and blue eyed. These future warriors had to be well educated and only from families of pure Aryan heritage.
The SS had been generally rather tall, well-made men, warriors. Now, this, Himmler did decree this for the SS in so much as they should all be 5'9" tall. Himmler was 5'9" tall. In addition to their size, they had to be of pure blood. Now, for the officers, they had to prove pure German ancestry without interbreeding back to 1750.
Himmler's SS, at one point 3 million strong, were encouraged to father as many children as possible, regardless of their marital status. The SS, he told them, had a sacred duty to their nation and to their Führer to beget healthy Aryan babies.
One of Himmler's ideas concerned polygamy. The only way in which he could breed the master race ever faster was by, in fact, instituting the practice whereby SS men would be able to take more than one wife.
In 1935, Himmler created the SS Lebensborn program, meaning Fountain of Life. Lebensborn was designed to facilitate the birth, housing, and raising of as many pure Aryan babies as possible. Himmler's program was documented by actual images of Lebensborn babies.
The SS Lebensborn was providing conditions whereby young girls could in fact be served by SS studs. He suggested that young Aryan girls in Germany who hadn't been able to find a boyfriend or a husband need not forego the pleasures of motherhood.
According to Lebensborn doctrine, an illegitimate child was no disgrace, as long as the mother was genetically fit. Women were thought to have only one function, to breed the children whose offspring the Nazi Party believed would become gods. An estimated 11,000 Lebensborn babies were bred between 1935 and 1945. Most of these children never knew their parents. The SS Weekly newspaper declared, "Only when the number of cradles constantly exceeds the number of coffins can we look forward with good cheer to a better future." The babies of Lebensborn immediately became property of the state, Some were raised at Lebensborn homes, while others were adopted and raised by SS families. During the war, children with Aryan appearance were abducted from conquered nations and sent to Lebensborn homes in Germany. Nazi records indicate that 200,000 Polish babies alone were kidnapped and placed in Lebensborn homes, where they received careful training in every aspect of Nazi culture and mythology. Long before Hitler came to power, these beliefs were flourishing against an already racist backdrop. There were many organizations in Germany and Austria around the turn of the century which blended racist ideology with occult practices. But their ideas became popular only at the conclusion of World War I. The once mighty empire of Germany had been disarmed and at the mercy of the victorious nations after the First World War. In formerly wealthy cities, disabled veterans haunted the streets like ghosts from another lifetime.
Somebody who grew up in Berlin in the 20s remembers anything. He remembers the urban landscape with cripples from the First World War, who of course had no pension, no nothing, who begged on the street without legs and arms, who remembered the great misery of what you might call the urban landscape.
Millions were unemployed. Inflation was rampant. Recession, starvation, and poverty were everywhere.
I saw many demonstrations before Hitler came to power. Real demonstrations which arose from the suffering of the people. The mass unemployment and the therefrom deriving poverty. And they were shouting slogans like, give us bread, give us work.
People looked for a scapegoat. Fear and distrust of foreigners intensified. Both ends of the political spectrum made a bid for the loyalty of the German people. After serving with distinction in the First World War, Hitler was stationed in Munich, where it was his job to infiltrate left-wing organizations for the army. One assignment changed the course of his life. He infiltrated an organization that was a backroom political club called the German Workers' Party. But far from being the communist organization that its name implied, the party turned out to be extremely right-wing. Hitler liked what he heard, joined, and eventually became leader of the organization. Attending an early rally where Hitler spoke was a disillusioned war veteran named Rudolf Hess.
He came back taking three steps by one, jumping up, and said, I saw one this evening, he's going to bring back Germany to the recommendation it had before the war, and this is the only man who was able to do it.
Hess was convinced the dynamic orator he heard was the long-awaited messiah, prophesied in German occult circles. With racist philosopher Alfred Rosenberg, Hess was a supporter of one of the more prominent groups, the Thule Society, which actively sought a Germanic messiah and was dedicated to the revival of the so-called Aryan master race. Members practiced astrology, sun worship, and other occult sciences, thinking that this would help them reach their goal. Their emblem was a dagger set against a curved swastika. With a membership that included some of Munich's richest and most powerful citizens, The society financed Hitler's German Workers' Party. In 1920, Hitler's party officially changed its name to the German National Socialist Workers' Party, the NSDAP, or as it would soon become known, the Nazi Party. With Hitler as its leader, the Nazi Party grew quickly, sweeping people up in a frenzy of fear-mongering and fiery oratory. He gave them the strong, charismatic leader they'd yearned for since the war. Like many Germans and Austrians of the time, Hitler lived in an environment that was already hostile to Judaism. He would have easily found these ideas in popular publications, such as Ostara, an overtly racist occult magazine written by a renegade and ultimately defrocked monk and mystic named Lance von Liebenfels.
Ostara magazine was a good example of how Hitler would have picked up his racism and his anti-Semitism. He even paid a visit to Lance's editorial office to obtain back numbers.
Immensely popular at the time, the journal preached that the Nordic or Aryan races had much to fear from people darker than themselves and targeted Jews as the most threatening. The Ostara claimed that the Jews were preventing the Aryans from taking their rightful place as rulers of the world, an eternal struggle dating back to biblical times. Headlines read, "Are you blonde? Then you are in danger. You should therefore read Ostara, Publications for Blondes and the Male Rights Movement." The publication outlined what would become the Nazi worldview, racial selection, Lebensborn, and even the Nazi death camps. With these ideas in place, Hitler's developing theories of race were ready to be further influenced, this time by Thule Society supporter Alfred Rosenberg, the racist philosopher and occultist who would eventually become the Führer's voice in spiritual matters. In his book, The Myth of the 20th Century, Rosenberg reinvented Germanic history and laid out the foundation for the new Nazi creed, the religion of the blood.
He saw blood, particularly in a religious sense, as the determining factor. In other words, a church had to be a church of the blood rather than a church of faith or a church of belief. The blood tied together the Nordic races. So for Rosenberg, blood, racial stock, racial identity became the keynotes of this new ideology.
Rosenberg preached that the blood of a people carried the soul of the race.
I think if you look back down the esoteric traditions of the West, you find that blood has always been considered as a very important vehicle of the spirit. It is a sacred substance that contains more than the physical life of each person, but also the spiritual life.
Nordic myth replaced the Christian Bible as the foundation of the new Nazi religion. In a pageant orchestrated by Rosenberg and captured on film, the Nazis celebrated their newly conceived version of Aryan culture and history. Rosenberg wrote, "Today a new mythos is dawning. The mythos of the blood, the belief that the godly essence is to be defended through the blood." Hitler took Rosenberg's idea further when he wrote, "The old beliefs will be brought back to honor again. The whole secret knowledge of nature, of the divine, the demonic, we will wash off the Christian veneer and bring out a religion peculiar to our race." As a symbol for the new religion, Hitler chose the swastika. The swastika can be found all over the world in many different cultures throughout history. From earliest times, it was the symbol of good luck in China, and to this day it remains a religious emblem in the Hindu and Buddhist faiths.
It had been carried by knights on shields as a magical protection, and it had also had connections. It was non-Christian in an overt sense. It represented the hammer of Thor. And, of course, Thor was a god of thunder and power and so on, a very macho, patriarchal kind of god.
Among the Norsemen, the swastika was a reminder of the Arctic sun, worshipped throughout pagan lore as a bearer of life and good fortune. For Hitler, the swastika held a different meaning. He wrote, "In the swastika, we see the mission of the struggle for the victory of the Aryan man." In the operas of Richard Wagner, Hitler saw victory reenacted time and time again. Questing knights, epic sagas of Teutonic traditions, and Norse mythology of warring forces of darkness and light were a common thread in German culture. Wagner gave these stories their most triumphant voice. Adolf Hitler was only 12 years old when he saw his first Wagner opera. As an adult, he became an obsessive devotee of the composer.
Richard Wagner was the most singularly admired person in Adolf Hitler's life and career, ever.
Wagner's genius for pageantry became an inspiration for the grandiose rallies Hitler would soon stage. Rallies where Wagner's music was often played.
The music is absolutely has the effect of a drug, completely eliminating the intellectual, the critical approach.
Wagner's opera Parsifal, which glorifies the power of pure blood, was a source of inspiration to Hitler. It is an epic retelling of the quest for the Holy Grail. According to legend, the Grail was a mystical vessel bearing sacred blood, and it promised unlimited powers to anyone who drank from it. It was believed the Grail could only be found by the purest of knights. In Parsifal, Wagner brought his own ideology to this story.
Parsifal is proclaiming on one side, and this is very important, he proclaims compassion, but only compassion for the Aryan, for the selected one.
Parsifal is a central symbol in Hitler's imagination. He often spoke of founding the religion of Parsifal again. And this idea of a Christian Grail knight seeking the mythos of pure blood is central to both Wagner and Hitler's own conception of what Nazi racism was doing in a supernatural sense.
In 1938, Hitler commissioned this portrait of himself dressed as a knight. Hitler's bid for power began on November the 9th, 1923, with an attempted overthrow of the Bavarian government. Leading a private army called Stormtroopers, he launched a surprise attack on a beer hall where government leaders were meeting. With Hess and Rosenberg at his side, Hitler brashly announced the formation of a new government, then took to the streets, marching 3,000 stormtroopers through Munich. They were confronted by police, shots were fired, and 16 of Hitler's men were killed. It was a failed coup. But in the 10 years before Hitler seized power, the 16 would become martyrs.
That time they were carrying a swastika flag, and this sort of fell with the people, and the blood of the dead got upon it. And a ritual arose whereby every new Nazi flag and banner was not empowered until Hitler had touched the flag against this flag.
Nazi blood attained a sacred, symbolic power, ritualized and sanctified in the ceremony known as the Rite of the Blood Flag.
The sort of magical power of the blood of the dead Nazis was transmitted to each Nazi flag, and it was consecrated thereby.
The blood flag was the crucifix of Hitler's religion. It would come to symbolize his new reign. In 1933, Hitler succeeded in becoming the Führer, the leader.
Unser Führer, der Reichskanzler Adolf Hitler, hat das Wort.
A title which would come to resonate with religious connotations of the Anointed One, or even the Messiah. Adolf Hitler's time had come. The party is Hitler. Hitler is Germany, and Germany is Hitler. With Hitler's elevation to leader, the blood religion became the undisputed religion of the Nazi Party, complete with holy days and martyrs. Propaganda Minister Goebbels orchestrated a ritual in which the 16 Nazi heroes were honored as martyrs of the Reich, who died, were resurrected, then achieved eternal life. Goebbels assured that all Germans would partake in the ceremony by broadcasting it over loudspeakers placed on street corners throughout the country. Part of the message said, "The night of the dead march in. At midnight, a mystical, ceremonial play, the birth of the Reich. They fight, die, and are victorious, just as the Third Reich was founded." According to Hitler, their blood was the holy water of the Third Reich.
I suppose most movements have their martyrs, and those who died in 1923, they were considered to be martyrs, and they were an example how you should stand firm and defend for what you believe in. So there was that religious undertone.
The first martyrs of the Reich became known as the 16 Immortals. In Munich, the ritual began with a funeral march down the very streets where the Immortals fell. At the front of the procession, they carried the blood flag. Along the route hung huge red flags bearing slanted Germanic runes, the ritual symbol of sacrifice from pagan lore.
So in a way, we can see this as a transfer of the Easter procession in Jerusalem up to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre through the Stations of the Cross. So there is an obvious copying of Christian ritual.
The bodies of the 16 heroes were interred in a building known as the Feldenhalle, or Temple of Honor. It would become a Nazi shrine. During this annual ceremony, the names of the 16 were called out, with anonymous voices answering the heroes' roll call, as if the dead marched in spirit with the living.
And when I was about 16, 17, my father took me to Munich, and I went to this Feldherrnhalle, and there the coffins were all lined up, and there were guards standing, presenting their rifles and steel helmets, and it was all rather eerie. In so many intervals, the names were mentioned, and they said, Friedrich Müller. And then a voice said, here. And then the next name, Hermann Stahmer. It was a religious ceremony.
With the rituals of his new religion in place, Hitler unleashed the next step of his plan. He wrote, "Force without spiritual foundation is doomed to failure."
It is a nationalism which determines everything, your whole lifestyle, yes? Your whole thoughts, yeah? Everything. The centerpiece of it, if you like, is that you are willing to sacrifice yourself for your fatherland.
Indoctrination into the Nazi faith, with Hitler as God, began early and continued into adulthood. Adolf Hitler is our savior, our hero. He is the noblest being in the whole wide world. For Hitler we live. For Hitler we die. Hitler is our Lord. In 1933, the party took over all Germany's youth organizations. For girls, the compulsory organization was the League of German Maids, where they were taught self-sacrifice, to marry young, and that their bodies belonged to the nation. Ten-year-old boys became members of the Organization of Young German People. At 14, they joined the Hitler Youth, and at 18, the Nazi Party. At At each stage, they were taught the Nazi creed of sacred blood rituals, racial superiority, and total allegiance to Hitler, even to the death.
I was in the Hitler Youth until I was 18. We were being taught, and I believed in it, that it was great to fight for our country, and if necessary, to die for our country.
This film shows one way the Nazis instilled this ideal. A war hero visits a Hitler youth camp.
It was great to be told that you belong to the greatest race, the greatest nation on earth. I thought that because I was a German, that German blood was running through my vein, that made me superior to all the others.
Hitler stated, "I want to see again in the eyes of youth the gleam of the beast of prey." The Hitler youth chanted a song of death.
"We are rising up to face storms of battle. A hero's death is our right." In other words, saying that a 17-year-old would be imbued with a notion that he can claim the right, it must be given to him, to lay down his life, to die for Führer and Fatherland. "You are nothing. Your nation, your race is everything."
At 18, cadets surrendered themselves to the Führer when they took a sacred oath.
"Ich schwöre," I swear, and we all had to repeat it, had to have our hands, our fingers in the air, "to serve Führer, Volk and Fatherland, to serve Führer, Volk and Fatherland," like a big rumble around the place. "To the last drop of our blood, to the last drop of our blood."
At the core of every German's indoctrination was Hitler's autobiography, Mein Kampf, or My Struggle. In it, he outlined the philosophy of the plans for a 1,000-year Nazi reign. Mein Kampf became the Nazi Bible.
I thought it was the greatest book ever written. The Bible is nothing as compared with that. And I still can quote from it now. And I mean, I've read it more than 60 years ago.
In conjunction with Mein Kampf, the principles of the blood religion began to form the basis of Nazi policy. Forced sterilization laws were enacted. Even Aryans were investigated for hereditary diseases. Ailments ranging from tuberculosis and epilepsy to alcoholism and depression were cause for automatic sterilization. Over 400,000 Germans suffered this fate. Hitler rationalized. The demand that defective people be prevented from propagating equally defective offspring is a demand of clearest reason, and if systematically executed, represents the most humane act of mankind. Children with health problems were registered at birth. If their problems persisted, Nazi doctors would secretly administer lethal injections, telling their parents they died of natural causes. A euthanasia program was instituted for the mentally and physically impaired. Propaganda films claimed these were acts of kindness, freeing trapped souls from tormented bodies. By 1935, Hitler had created the blood laws, which made it a criminal act for a pure German to marry or even have sex with a Jew. And German Jews were stripped of their rights as citizens. But the worst was still to come. Purifying the Aryan bloodline was only half of Hitler's demonic plan. To finally clear the way for the last stage of human evolution and assure the coming of the Aryan millennium, the Nazis felt that one obstacle remained: the very existence of non-Aryans.
So you began by sterilizing them. You then found that this was too slow, and you ended by murdering them in gas chambers, which was quick and efficient and cheap.
Hitler wrote, "The gravest and most ruthless decisions will have to be made, a barbaric measure for the unfortunate who is struck by it, but a blessing for his fellow man and posterity. The passing pain of a century can and will redeem millenniums from sufferings." The idea that the few should be sacrificed for the good of the many extended even to Hitler's SA, the stormtroopers. Eventually, the SA, who were among Hitler's first supporters, became an obstacle, one that he had no qualms about removing.
Without the SA, probably he would not have come to power, because people were afraid of the SA. They were rowdies and street fighters. They broke up demonstrations and they protected their own big meetings.